You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network. Packers Talk.
But on Twitter.
Yes, somebody suggested it. Shocking.
Somebody, a lot of people. There suddenly this.
There was a whole thing going on. Yes, sure. Yes.
And I'm tagging you and everything, waiting for you to yell at them. Like you yelled at me, but you're not doing it. So what's going on?
I don't have the time to yell at everybody on the internet, CD, okay? You're here. It's easy to yell at you, right? That's one person.
You're listening to the best Packer radio show on the internet.
Cheesehead Radio.
I want to be a lifetime Cheesehead. Green Bay Packer.
You're looking good today.
So let's go out there and win better.
Aaron Rodgers is the best football player I've ever seen, ever.
Aaron Rodgers rolling deep on second and two. He's got a leap in Devontae Adams.
He's the best.
First and goal. Rodgers hangs in the pocket, throwing into a lot of traffic, and it's caught for the touchdown.
Well, that defense is going to give a lot of teams struggles. We got a defense.
Aaron Rodgers.
Once again, we got a defense.
Cheesehead Radio.
Hello again, Cheesehead Nation. We are back with another episode of Cheesehead Radio. Now in our 11th season. Your trio of hosts tonight are the rather glum Kelly Hodgson, known as That Packer Girl on Twitter. Also joining us is the despondent CD Angeli, Tundra Vision on Twitter, and little old me, Jersey Al of Packers Talk and Cheesehead TV. You can find me at Jersey Al GBP on Twitter. That's it for the introductions. Let's get to the Packers playbook.
The playbook.
All right, Packer Nation. That one wasn't easy to watch. Now, this loss that we had to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, we've had some really rough seasons, 2017, 2008. You know, we had some real big clunkers. We weren't expecting to do well in a lot of those games. This was the 4-0 possible Super Bowl champion, possible MVP, Aaron Rodgers. Everything was going well, and holy cow, did it come apart at the seams.
They never even got started. That was the problem.
I would disagree. I think they got started. Really,
the offense? Really? Where was it?
Well, they did score 10 points and were up, 10-0.
And then they wilted.
But you know, Aaron Rodgers took that hit in the end zone. And obviously we can talk about that a little bit later, but that really seemed to just turn the tide of how he was playing. And yeah, as we look at the autopsy of this game, we may as well look at Aaron Rodgers. Two interceptions in three attempts. What's up with that?
Well, you talked about that hit. I just want to point out that he then later took another hit on the second interception return, where he gave himself up and Shaq Barrett really gave him a good shot, clean, nothing dirty about it, but a nice hard shot and jarred him a little bit there. So he took two really big hits on top of, the Bucs getting to him a little bit and roughing him up a little bit in the pocket. So there was no doubt that, he was feeling it. Now, going back to the other point about getting off to whether they got off to a good start or not, I kind of agree more with Kelly on this. Yeah, they scored 10 points. But you know what? It was really a lot of the old Aaron Rodgers, busting out of the pocket, making plays on the fly, and he made a bunch of completions, third down completions, where he had to escape the Tampa Bay rush and made a completion on third down to advance the drive. And that's kind of how they did it the first two drives. And that's really not something that we've learned can be sustainable with Aaron Rodgers at this age, right? It would have been fine 5 years ago or earlier, but just doesn't work anymore for him. It looks much nicer, what we saw the first four games when everything's in rhythm and he's getting the ball out fast. And, that's a much better approach. So I wasn't – he kind of put it on his shoulders to get those first 10 points, which is fine. They got 10 points out of it, but that wasn't going to last, and it didn't. So I just wanted to mention that part as well.
Well, he really reminded me of a 2018 Aaron Rodgers that was never quite comfortable with where he was in time and space for the entire game. And when you get him off his game and you get him putting it all on his shoulders, it really reminds me of that 2012 playoff game where we got annihilated by the Giants, because he did the exact same thing there. It's like, if nothing's working, he's going to try to force it. He's going to try to put the whole team on his shoulders. And that's when a good defense, and I think we got out coached this week, knows how to get to Aaron Rodgers. You get in his head, you get him off kilter, and that's when he starts making mistakes. He was throwing his interceptions reminded me of that Giants game, because he just started lobbing it up, hoping anyone would catch it, and everyone starts to jump his routes, and they know where he's going to throw it then, because he goes into desperation mode.
He almost had a third, too. He had Rob Bertanian open, wide open in the middle, and threw it low and behind him, and the Bucs defender just dropped it and you're diving for the ball. That would have been a third interception. So it just wasn't a good day for him. And I think you can credit the Bucs for not making it a good day for him.
Yeah. I don't think he was ever comfortable in that game.
Yeah.
CD hit on it. He got trucked in the end zone. And after that, he didn't look like the Aaron Rodgers we saw the first four games. The first four games, he looked confident. He was sure of himself. He was comfortable in the pocket. And Sunday, I just didn't see that same player.
I do think that, and this is my conspiracy theory that Al will make fun of me for, but...
Tinfoil hats, kids.
There you go. Devontae Adams. What are we now? 8-0 in games where he hasn't played. and, you know, yeah, it sounds funny to talk about, but let's be realistic. Devontae Adams not playing in games these past few weeks was this huge source of consternation. We were worried. We're like, what are we going to do? We have no receivers. Oh, no, Alan Lazard's not going to play. We're going to not have... And Aaron Rodgers went into those games and played strictly by what the scheme asked him to do. He got back. He did his misdirection. He got the ball out in 2 to 3 seconds, and he threw it to a guy who was schemed wide open, and it didn't matter who it was, if it was Robert Tonyan or Alan Lazard or Marquez, it didn't matter. But all of a sudden, Devontae Adams is back, and he starts playing like 2019 Aaron Rodgers. He starts going back, he's sitting in the pocket for 5 seconds, and you cannot tell me those two interceptions were not being forced into his buddy Devontae Adams. Little conspiracy theory there.
Yes,
but...
I can tell you that.
Yeah, I agree.
On one of them. The second one was not a force.
No, the other one was also to Adams, and it was poorly thrown.
No, the first one was definitely a force because he never looked away from Adam.
Right.
If you run that play back, watch from the snap, he's looking at Adams the entire way, and he doesn't normally do that. So that was a big mistake.
So we agree. Good.
On that, absolutely. The second one, I don't agree. Because that was just
unlucky.
A straight slant. He had him. The defender made a fantastic play. That's it.
And there was a rebound.
Carlton Davis, I think it was, just great coverage. He got his arm in there. He deflected the ball, and the ball bounced up. So I think you're absolutely right on the first one, but not on the second.
But he's right with that. When Aaron goes into panic mode, he really gets tunnel vision. Mm-hmm. And Devontae became his security blanket. Yeah, anytime he was going to try to force it, anytime he was going to get more than about 3 yards, for the vast majority of the time, Adams was the target. It's like he sometimes lost sight of everybody else on the field. And I don't know, that kind of brings up our next topic. Was it he was just looking too much to Adams, or was it because our other receivers were really struggling to get open?
Well, that's a good question. And I think one that maybe comes down to the game plan I think how the game plan kind of changed once they started putting pressure on Rodgers. You know, the first couple of drives, they were running a lot of shallow crossers, things where Rodgers could get the ball out quickly when he had time. He did have to break out a few times, as I mentioned before, and make plays on the run. But that seemed to change afterwards. You know, for whatever reason, if you're going into the second quarter, maybe after Tampa Bay suddenly goes up 14-10, you didn't see the same type of quick routes. It seemed like they went to more of the old McCarthy stuff with more isolation routes and longer developing routes. And, you know, that's kind of the absolutely wrong thing to do with a team like the Bucs that can get on top of you. So I blame a little bit that on the game plan and changing the game plan. As far as the receivers getting open, I can't really say I went back and studied the receivers and looked at the all 22 on the receivers to mention on that. So it's possible, but you know, I can't really say that was the case.
But I really think they got outcoached in this aspect. Mm-hmm. It's almost they were told if Rodgers gets off his game, this is what he's going to do. And they anticipated it perfectly.
Well, no doubt. I mean, they got outplayed and they got outcoached completely. Same as the 49ers game last year. They got outplayed and they got outcoached. You know, and these are, from the coaching perspective, these are all learning experiences, right? We got a second year head coach. So what the best we can do is hope that he's learning something from these experiences and that he'll figure out a way to be better on it in the future.
And Matt LaFleur did take accountability, and I was impressed by it. I think that was good, because if you saw Mike McCarthy this week,
he doubled down is what he'll always do.
Why? What did he say? I didn't see what he had to say.
I don't know what he said specifically, but it was just kind of the same old Mike McCarthy.
Oh, highly successful football coach, blah, blah.
Yeah. That'd be great if he pulled that out of the archives again.
No, LaFleur, I think, took a lot of accountability. I mean, it's good to hear. It's good to hear kind of a straight shooter talking about things. He said, you know, we had a flat week of practice. And you can sit there and blow up and say, how can you have a flat week of practice? You had 2 weeks. You had a bye week. How do you have a flat week of practice? But he admitted it, and it was evident, because everybody in the locker room, from the offense to the defense to J.K. Scott, I mean, everybody was flat.
I do appreciate that he didn't throw any one player under the bus, and that he really acknowledged, himself included, that it was a definite, you know, the whole team as a whole laid an egg.
Yeah, I don't know. All right, so, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, I was just going to skip ahead there. We got our starting number one and all the grades and all of the PFF or whatever they do on all the screens and say, oh, rank number one out of, you know, 72 offensive tackles. David Bakhtiari. Went out of the game with a chest injury. It was, you know, I can't say there was a whole lot of air in the team at that point anyway, but any remaining air in the team was definitely taken out at that point. Kelly, what's your thoughts? What's the, is this looking like a torn pectoral? Is he out for months? Is he out for years? What's going on?
Well, years. Unfortunately, the Packers, shocker, I know, are kind of holding the cards close on what exactly the injury is. But if you kind of break down the semantics of it all, I really do think it's a torn pec, because if it was a rib, he broke a rib, that's chest too. They'd say, oh yeah, he's got a cracked rib. If it was on the backside of his chest, it would be like, oh, he's got a back injury. Which leaves us with musculature. And what you can get a big injury in is a torn pec. People think of J.J. Watt, who was out last season with a torn... Was it last season? Yeah, I think it was last season with a torn pec. But usually, if you're out for a season, that's a full tear, and that's involving surgery. We haven't heard of Bakhtiari going to surgery, so I can safely assume that it's not a complete tear of the muscle where it needs to be repaired. So I suspect he has a partially torn pec, and that type of recovery is in terms of weeks. So I would probably guess 4 to 8 weeks is my guess, because that's typically the other muscular type injuries that don't require surgery. But what's really interesting, and I did a little deep dive today because I am a nerd, the NFL has seen just an astronomical explosion of pec injuries in the past 10 years. There was a study, and it was in the Orthopedic Journal of Sports Medicine, and it may only interest me, but I'm going to point it out anyway, that between 2000 and 2010, there were only 10 cases that were torn pecs in the entire NFL. 7 years after that, there were 55. And they really don't think that it's from an increase. The increased numbers appear to be appears to be independent of relative strength, agility, arm length, or related to somebody who's had performance-enhancing drugs. So they're just happening at a higher rate. We're still trying to figure out why, and I think that's what Bakhtiari had.
Well, that so all makes us very happy.
Well, it's a more common injury. But the crappy light at the end of the tunnel is I don't think it's partially torn, because nobody's mentioning surgery.
I can hear our Packer fan listeners jumping off the ledge as we speak here.
It's going to be a handful of weeks.
I know. I'm being facetious, but
I don't think it's a season ender because, no, like I said, nobody's mentioned surgery.
The big question is, what are we going to do about it? What are the Packers going to do about it, actually, to be more correct? What they did on Sunday was not the answer, right? Do we all agree on that? Mm-hmm. Seeing Rick Wagner at
the best answer that they have, though. That's the problem.
I don't know.
They may not have a lot of other answers.
Yeah. I don't know. They could move somebody. They move Jenkins to right tackle earlier in the season. They could try to move him to left tackle, you know, try that. Bring Patrick in, for a Jenkins spot. And that's the only other thing I can think of, really. They do have Yosh who knows how you can say his last name, Nijmegen or whatever, on the roster as a backup tackle, but he's seen hardly any snaps. So I don't know if they would entrust him to the left tackle spot. But Rick Wagner was certainly not the answer. I mean, they went around him like he was standing still on that position. So it's going to be a dilemma if they lose Bakhtiari for a few weeks or even a couple of months.
Any enough, David Bakhtiari is in a contract year, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
So we
not
might
the way
be able
he
to
wants it.
We might be able to get him with competitor coupons. You know, let's see how cheap we can get him then.
I don't know if that'll work for him, but I have a feeling he's really looking to get paid. So, and I cannot blame him. You know, this will probably be his last contract, and he's built himself up to where he's one of the top tackles in the NFL. Why wouldn't you expect to get paid in your last go round? You know, so. I don't know that he's given any hometown discounts, sadly. That's just gut feeling, but anyway.
And this is what drives me nuts with the Packers, whether it was LeFleur or McCarthy. They always seem to have an enormous step down, and sure, every team's going to in quality from first string to second string. But our backup options often seem like, okay, we have one or two guys to pick from, go. Why don't we ever have enough to go around knowing the wear and tear of the offensive line?
Well, an easy answer to that is exactly what they've been harping on the last few weeks is the interchangeability of their backups. They love having guys who can play right guard last year and then move to right tackle for a game and then move over to left guard. So, you know, that kind of takes care of some of the need to build depth when you have guys who can move up and down the line. But problem is you still run out of them eventually too. And now we don't have a premier left tackle or anyone can really step in there. You're just hoping that those interchangeable guys can suddenly play like solid talents at that position.
And I think that's an okay mindset if you're thinking guards and centers shifting around. But come on, a tackle, especially a left tackle, that's definitely a specialty position within the line. And Rick Wagner just showed his whole butt to the world and how he was not prepared to take on that position this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue that. That's for sure. I just want to see who else they have. Is Alex Light still on the team?
I don't believe so.
No,
I don't think so. Right?
But do we have to look at the practice squad?
He was like their emergency backup tackle last season. We have Bakhtiari, we have Yosh Nijmegen, we got Rick Wagner. Those three are the only two actually listed as tackles on the roster. Everyone else is listed as guard. So we really only have three true tackles, three true tackles on the team, with Billy Turner as a guard slash tackle, and obviously he's been playing tackle. That's pretty unusual, I'll bet, among NFL teams. If you look at other teams' rosters, I guarantee you everybody has at least four tackles on their roster. So the Packers have definitely rolled the dice a bit there, and now it's come back to bite them here.
Because seriously, when was the last time we had a season where one of the tackles didn't miss a significant amount of time?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, if we could only plan for this, but they didn't.
Well, it makes up for those six tight ends, right?
With the way Wagner was playing this weekend, I was like, please line a tight end up next to him as a set of training wheels. Please, 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 because Aaron's getting squashed on every play.
All right, we're going to transition. I'm just going to kind of go off on a rant here, because You know, I watch. I'm pretty calm. I'm gotten older. I've been through this. I don't tend to get really upset when bad things happen. I don't get really, you know, jumping around the room like a Chicago Bears kid filming himself, you know, reacting to things. But this is as emotional as I've gotten in a long time. When Aaron Rodgers got belted in the end zone and they threw the flag and they were going to call the unnecessary roughness, which I got because he dove in head first. It's fine. They picked it up, and I said, that's fine. It was a legal hit, I suppose. It was harder, maybe, than it needed to be.
He got speared in the back. How legal is that?
But what the heck?
Hey, this is CD's rule.
What is this rule in which no one knows it? You can't tell me 95% of the fans didn't know that when a quarterback dives head first, according to some rule change from 2 years ago, that's giving up your body. Now, if Aaron Rodgers knew this rule, why would he have gone head first from the 1 yard line? Because that's where the ball was brought back to. I'm wondering if the refs even knew what this rule was, because they had to get together and huddle for like 3 minutes to go, you remember us talking about that rule in that meeting a couple years ago? Yeah. Is that still a thing? I don't know. Let's call someone over New York. So they take away the unnecessary roughness, but he gave his body up. If he were sliding feet first and he got hit like that, that's an automatic penalty. But they made the same rule to dive head first. They put the ball on the one, but then they took away the penalty for the hit. I was so frustrated with that.
Well, let me tack on to that. Is it, and I don't know the answer to this, and I've actually been wondering but haven't had time to research it. Why is he considered down when his knee hits the ground and nobody has touched him? Is this part of the rule? Is this part of the giving the body up rule for a quarterback?
And I remember, and I tweeted that at the time. I said, no one touched him. He can crawl into the end zone from 10 yards out as long as no one touches him.
So do you know the answer? Is that part of the rule?
Because that's okay.
I think there's a BS.
If I knew the answer, I wouldn't be ranting.
There's a bit of BS.
I mean, to that
rule.
Part of it. I mean, no, to my part of it. Yeah.
Because this rule is similar to the other ones, like the slide rule. As soon as you're in motion, if it's anything but your feet going first, you are considered a runner, just like a running back. So along those lines, if you're giving your body up, it's saying, okay, I am now in play. So yeah, if he puts his knee down, who the heck cares? Because he's just like a running back. Because if that was Jamal Williams or Aaron Jones, they would be scoring in that situation. So I didn't get the whole knee down thing either.
Well, it wasn't a knee down. It was he gave his body up. It was the equivalent of a slide, except if he goes head first, it's a slide, except he's sliding with his head.
So they all right, well, that's the answer then. So they still, yes. Because it's a quarterback, they still consider it a slide, even though he's head first.
But why can you target the head then if he's head first, but you can't touch him if he's sliding? The whole idea is quarterback.
Oh, my gosh, you understand my rant now.
Yes, I totally understand.
You got it,
rant.
Eureka.
Okay, when it comes to the NFL and player safety, they say one thing and they do another. So are you surprised at all, CD?
What I remember hearing is that Matt LaFleur wanted an explanation because he didn't get it. If you're giving up your body, that's an unnecessary roughness. I think what it does go back to, though, is why in the world is a 36-year-old quarterback throwing his body knowing he's going to get hit like that anyway? Whether doesn't matter, because clearly he didn't know the rule either about going head first being some sort of giving your body up, whatever, but why would you do that when you're 30? I get it. You want to be a hero. You want to do the belt. You want to do the Key and Peele thing in the end zone, whatever. But you're 36. You're about to turn 37 years old. You can't take hits like this anymore. Look what happened. This has got to be a learning thing for Aaron Rodgers as well. Don't do this dumb stuff anymore.
He is lucky he did not get snot bubbled and forget the whole day like he did in that game in Detroit in 2010, where, you know, he got completely annihilated. And if you talk to him to this day, he doesn't remember much of that day.
Yeah, it was the rule came in the 2018 season. I just looked it up. Mm-hmm. And yes, the gist of it is that head first slide is considered the same as a feet first slide.
But then why did they touch him?
Except for your unnecessary roughness part of it. Right.
Meanwhile, you can't breathe on Brady without a without a flag. So where's the logic in that?
Well, we wouldn't know because we didn't get near Brady. So
no, and the only time we did, we grabbed his helmet and we got flagged.
Right. Rightfully so.
Rightfully so. That one we earned.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jersey out.
Yes, sir.
2 weeks ago, I proposed an idea that you said was completely ridiculous. And that was the idea that the Houston Texans, who are playing this upcoming weekend, are doing so poorly that they might trade J.J. Watt to the Packers. And you mocked that and said, no one in the world would ever suggest anything like that. And yet...
No, I didn't say that at all.
Yes.
I said that he would never do it. No. That the Texans would never do it. Not that anyone would never suggest it. Go ahead.
But on Twitter...
Yes, somebody suggested it. Shocking.
Somebody, a lot of people. There suddenly this.
I know there was a whole thing going on. Yes, yeah, sure. Yes.
And I'm tagging you and everything, waiting for you to yell at them, like you yelled at me. But you're not doing it. So what's going on?
I don't have the time to yell at everybody on the internet, CD. Okay, you're here. It's easy to yell at you, right? That's one person. I don't have the time to correct the world. Sorry, I cannot do that.
But hey, get the coupons, search the couch for loose change. If he's going on the market, I might not say no.
Say no immediately.
Okay, I would say no to Antonio Brown.
He has missed the equivalent of 2.5 years in the last 5 years.
Yeah, he is kind of an injury magnet. 50%. So that's why I say get the coupons, get the loose change.
No. Give me somebody else. I'm sorry. I love J.J. Watt. He's a great dude, obviously. He showed that with his support of the hurricane victims down in Texas and everything. And he was a fantastic player when he's on the field, game-changing, you know, Reggie White almost level game influencer. But he's not that anymore. So we don't want him now. We wanted him years ago. And somebody had a – during that, I was reading through some of those tweets and that whole thing. Somebody said, We don't want J.J. Watt. We want T.J. Watt, you know.
We could have had T.J. Watt, and I'm still incredibly salty about that.
That's the point of it. Yeah, exactly. Anyway.
So as long as we're kind of on this topic of people saying things on the internet, you have a little graphic up here, Jersey Al, of our good friend Rob Reichel. You want to
excel? Friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
It's painful to bring this up, but it needs to be brought up, right? Because this is a referendum on journalism in the year 2020. So Rob does some writing for, of all things, Forbes magazine. They actually have people who write about sports for Forbes magazine, and Rob does that. And I guess he writes mostly about the Packers. I don't know if he writes exclusively about the Packers or not, but probably not. But in any case, so 12 days ago with the Green Bay Packers at 4-0 and everything is wonderful and great, we have an article that Rob wrote entitled Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers is perfectly positioned to win another MVP. All right. Well, hey, that sounds pretty good. And then the bye week goes by and then the game happens and 12 days later, exactly 12 days later, we have a new article by Rob, which is titled, Aaron Rodgers' Latest Stinker Reminds Everyone Why the Green Bay Packers Drafted Jordan Love. Now,
that is Rob, such a crappy take. Let me
Rob,
just add it.
Look, I understand that, you know, you need to make a living, right? That people need to make a living. And maybe the editors at Forbes said, hey, Rob, you know, we need you to kind of like ramp it up a notch, you know, and get more people involved and clicking and, you know, and maybe this is the response and maybe he has to do this. I'm trying to give him every benefit of the doubt here, but it's really crappy, okay, to do something like that. Two completely opposite ends of the spectrum after one game because there was one bad game. So I hope that it's just something he's got to do to pay the bills, but it's a shame.
Sure.
It was so clickbaity. It was irritating, for lack of a better term.
I know.
Come on. Hasn't he tried to write a hit piece on Rodgers? You know, whenever the wind blows the wrong way, it's like, oh, Rodgers is past his prime. He's a prima donna. Let me, you know, not as bad as Florio, but I think I remember different incarnations of this article before.
Yeah. That I can't speak to.
But the fact that he is standing on both sides
12 days apart
of the same argument.
12 days apart.
Either you support him and think he's great, or you're writing clickbait. And yeah. You mentioned Jordan Love just to hack off Packer fans.
Absolutely.
And Al, I don't want to take the air out of your hot pockets later, but I will say this. I won't. But there was a lot of vitriol, a lot of real negativity from Packers Twitter during this game.
Actually, I changed my hot pocket. It's not that anymore. So you can go ahead and say whatever you want.
So I guess to a degree, there's kind of a chicken or egg with Rob Reichel or people like him, because, you know, does he publish something like this, you know, kind of a Colin Coward type piece, which is really just kind of meant to maybe get clicks and rile people up? Or does he witness people being all riled up and conspiracy theory and fire everybody and all this stuff? And therefore, he writes an article that obviously he knows is going to appeal to someone. I mean, if you're a writer, especially nowadays, you got to have an audience for what you're writing. And I think it's clear, unfortunately, as long as many of us intelligent fans will look at this and say it's ridiculous, clearly there's someone who's agreeing.
But then if that's the audience, then how do you explain the first article? Because that wouldn't be the same audience.
But once again, it's reading the news. At this point, everyone on Twitter was saying that
he's the MVP. With the mass feeling at the time, basically.
Yep.
To maximize how many people are going to try to read it.
And then today, Rob Domofsky was like at Rogers going, hey, is there something wrong? You seem a little blue and under the weather. And he's like, oh my God, no, just stop.
Did he call him Bob?
I just saw a clip of it. I don't know if it was Bob or not, but you could just, you know, hear Aaron's eyes rolling in the back of his head.
Well, this is what happens with Forbes magazine. Then you go to them for your sports. How's that sound?
Yeah, exactly.
So, but here at Cheesehead Radio, we're going to talk about Preston Smith.
Good old Preston Smith. You remember that guy from last year?
Does he still exist? Really? I haven't seen him in all this year.
All those sacks and pressures and great play. Where'd he go?
You know, we talked a little bit about it last week, and I kind of stepped in and defended him and said, hey, you know what? He's doing the job of Kenny Clark. He's eating up offensive linemen to open the door for other people like Rashawn Gary and Za'Darius. But we had Kenny Clark back in the game.
Sure did.
And he still
wasn't
anywhere.
Obviously not 100%.
Yeah. But so, yeah, I mean, it's troublesome because Preston Smith is taking up a huge chunk of our salary cap for the next couple years.
Yeah, that's really the issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not that he is – you know, a bad player or anything like that. I mean, he's playing okay. You know, he's doing good things. He's just not having the impact that somebody making that salary, you expect to have the impact. And he did last year, so we know he's capable, right? But, I mean, to me, he looks almost a little sluggish. I don't know if there's some, you know, some injury or something bothering him that we're not privy to, but he doesn't look like the same person. So the question is, what's up with Preston Smith?
And I'll be honest, when I'm watching a play, sometimes I'll see who stands out as opposed to I'm going to follow a player. And when I do it that way, I can't even find Smith on the field. He's such a non-entity most of the time that I'm not seeing him blow up plays, or I'm not seeing him get to the quarterback. I mean, he literally vanishes on the field. I can't find him if I'm just looking at everybody all at once.
He's either dropping in coverage, right, where he hasn't been involved in anything. He hasn't blocked a pass, hasn't covered any, hasn't been involved in anything. Or he's getting swallowed up by blockers on the pass rush. So that's exactly why you don't even notice him, you know.
And to be honest,
that's a real problem.
But to his defense, watching the game on Sunday, nobody stood out. Everybody vanished in the woodwork. And it was like a bunch of green doing nothing.
Well, that's a whole different show.
Well, the hard part is that there are several times during the game where I kind of zoomed in on Preston Smith, and he's really just being handled one-on-one. I mean, one blocker is handling him.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Kabir Gabaja Biamila, to be honest with you.
Minus the craziness.
Well, yeah, he wasn't necessarily quite as crazy then, but you know, that's what happened when KGB went full-time. I mean, he had one move, and one blocker handled him. And he really was kind of a non-impactful player. It's kind of what we're seeing with Preston Smith, and I'm hoping that changes soon. We've reached the end of our segment of the playbook. We have a little guest recording coming in tonight. Our former co-host, John Rahor, was famous on our show for his rants. He has moved on and become a kinder, gentler Rahor. So he has provided his own little listening to reason for us to listen to. So take it away, John.
Rants with Rahor.
Listening to reason with John Rahor.
Listening to reason.
Hey, Packer fans. I just want to take a couple seconds here and talk about that game on Sunday. So, Packers really kind of pooped the bed, didn't they? But, you know, we've seen this before. How many times when Mike McCarthy was a coach did they have one of these games? They'd play great for a stretch, and they'd have that game where you would just come out of the game shaking your head because nothing worked. The offense didn't look right. The defense really didn't look right. Special teams was meh. That was basically Sunday. They came out flat as they possibly could, and they got exposed, sadly, in front of a national audience. But you know what? I think it's a good thing. I think it gives everybody a dose of reality. I think it gives the team a chance to really assess what some weaknesses are and gives them an opportunity to play a little bit better. I don't care if they went undefeated in the regular season. I care about them winning a Super Bowl. And if they needed a reality check to make that happen, then so be it. So let's hope they come out this Sunday against a one-win Texan team and really show the NFL that Sunday was one of those shake-your-head kind of moments. If they come out flat, then we can have a deeper discussion. But right now, I'm not worried. You shouldn't be either. This team is a good team. They played lights out for 4 weeks, and they had a scratch-your-head game. I don't think they're going to have another one. I think they're going to come out Sunday on a mission to prove, yeah, we're that good. You know what we did this past week? We were exposed. It's not going to happen again. Relax, everybody. This is a damn good football team. Go Pack, go. Talk to you soon.
All right, we've reached the point in the show where each of us get a final moment to get up on our soapbox and read you all the riot act of whatever is going on inside our heads. This is our Hot Pot. Jersey Al, we'll start with you.
Okay, so the last few weeks, as we've been discussing the Packers here on this show and elsewhere, we're all kind of asking, who is going to stop this Packers offense, right? Well, thanks to the 49ers last year and the Bucs this year, we have enough examples now to know how to reduce the Packers' high-powered offense to Bears-level ugliness. Have fast, aggressive players at all three levels of the defense. Yep, if you've got that, you're good. Superman had his kryptonite, and this is the Packer. Now, luckily, there aren't a lot of teams that have the personnel and the coaching acumen to play this sort of uber-aggressive approach and pull it off successfully. But the question is, when the Packers come up against one of those teams, what can they do to handle it? They've got to figure something out, and that is my
Hot Pockets.
Oh, that Packers defense. Am I right? Fire Mike Patton. What's wrong with Preston Smith? Why can't they make tackles, right? There was some vitriol placed on the Packers defense on Sunday, and it wasn't necessarily misplaced. The only problem is, of course, the Packers defense should have drawn the same criticisms every week, not just the ones where we lose. See, that's the thing about having the most prolific offense in the game through four games. Your defense doesn't have to play well. But in the end, it wasn't the defense that let us down on Sunday. Through four games, when the offense never put them in bad field position or had turnovers, the Packers defense still allowed 25.2 points per game. Now, on Sunday, if you take away the pick six the defense had no control over, and even the touchdown scored on the second interception, that obviously was down right on like the 1 yard line, that team only allowed 24 points, the same number of points that they're pretty much allowing per game anyway. In other words, this defense is exactly who we thought they were. It's time to be a little more pragmatic, and let's stop forgiving the defense when the offense completely bails them out, and stop completely blaming them when the offense completely disappears. They are worthy of criticism. But Sunday had a whole lot of blame ready to dish out all around every aspect of the Packers locker room. And that is my
Hot Pockets.
Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, and sometimes you get kicked in the teeth during the Sunday late game to bring you back down to earth. Let's face it, the Packers do not exactly have a great track record when it comes to the week after the bye. Last year, it was a 37-8 spanking from the Niners. The year before that, they lost to the Rams by 2 points. And in 2017, it was a loss to the Lions. This is starting to be a trend. This past weekend, and I quote the musical Hamilton, the Packers were outgunned, outmanned, outnumbered, and outplanned. So whatever they've been doing following the bye for the past 4 years, head coach notwithstanding, is not good. Sure, it's good to be reminded every once in a while that you aren't all that in a bag of chips. But come on, an anti-trap trap game? Really? The way I see things, there is a gut check going on right about now in the locker room. And I'm not going to put lipstick on this very ugly pig. The Packers need to figure out what went wrong sooner than later. Preferably sooner. And that is my
Hot Pockets
Cheesehead Radio Packer Game Predictions.
All right, let's put this game behind us, put it in the rearview mirror. The Packers are going to move forward, and they're going to hope for a get-well-soon game against the Houston Texans on Sunday. Another hot-weather game on the road. Will the Packers pull it out? Vegas says they are presently 3.5-point favorites. What do you say, Kelly? We'll start with you.
Nothing like a good butt-kicking to gain a little perspective. The one good thing after an embarrassing loss is to come back roaring, and the Packers tend to do that. I feel sorry for the Texans. It isn't personal. It's just Rodgers once again on his revenge tour, and you're the first stop. Packers 31, Texans 17.
Okay, I'm with Kelly on this one, but I don't think the Texans are a team to overlook. Three of their losses were to the Ravens, Steelers, and Titans, three teams who have a total of one loss between them. The Packers should have enough angst built up to cross the finish line first, but this could be a wild shootout. I have the Packers prevailing by a score of 34-31.
You guys are really thinking this is going to be a shootout, aren't you? I'm going to rethink this. Warm weather team on the road 2 weeks in a row. Look, I don't think the Packers lose this game, but that doesn't mean it can't happen. Now, trust me, the bravado and the overconfidence is gone from this fan base. We're going to be sitting on the edge of our seats at kickoff because we're not sure what we're going to get, are we? The Packers have a lot to get better at this week. Houston is the perfect get-well-soon team to do it against. I predict, though, while the Packers prevail 26-18, it's going to be a low-scoring affair, as our offense is going to be focusing on efficiency, and our defense, I hope, focuses on wrapping up tackles.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight on Cheesehead Radio in our 11th season, and many thanks to the Zen Master Rahor for joining us tonight. Make sure to head over to PackersTalk.com, where you can explore several unique Packers podcasts. Please follow at PackersTalkNet on Twitter and like us on Facebook. Cheesehead Radio and all Packers podcasts are available on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcatching app. You can also find us with Siri, Alexa, or Google just by saying, "Play Packers Talk Podcast." That's a wrap. Go Pack Go.
Thanks a lot, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Be 5-1 next week, right?
I hope so.
Go Pack Go.
Good night. Go Pack.
Go Pack.
Cheesehead Radio.
Hey, don't say anything bad.
Where are the bodies buried?
He's Italian. That's not funny.
Yeah, I'm not laughing.